Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, comedian Pete George talks about how he was once hired to do stand-up comedy on Continental Airlines.
I get to the airport in Cleveland, and there's a big marquee with my headshot at the gate. Appearing this flight, Pete George! Now, we're not allowed to use the plane's PA system. She has a microphone with a little tiny handheld speaker that she holds up next to my head while I'm standing there. So my third flight back to Cleveland, we get on the plane and there's four people. So I look at the rep from Continental, I go, do I have to do the show? She says, yeah, you still gotta do it. I'm like, really, for four people? She says, yeah, you gotta do it.
Today on the show, comedian Pete George tells a really funny story about being hired to do stand-up comedy on Continental Airlines. Stay close.
Hey, it's Pete George, and you are listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. I don't know if you knew this, Pete George, who's sitting in front of me, but I'm coming up on my 9-year anniversary with Storyworthy. Yeah.
9 years.
July 10th will be 9 years.
You started when you were 11?
That's exactly right.
Excellent.
That's exactly right. And I've learned a lot. No, but it is crazy. Oh, well, listen, it sounds so cliche to say time flies, but it's the Adam Carolla show was like 10 years ago.
Right.
Mark Maron was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Risk was 10 years ago. I was just 9. So I'm not quite where those guys are, but I definitely have done a lot of shows.
Yeah.
And you
have
enjoy it.
You have a buttery voice.
A buttery voice.
Very buttery. Very smooth. Yeah.
Interesting. You should hear some of the audiobooks I've done.
Mm.
Some on the, you know, when you start doing audiobooks,
yeah.
I don't do them anymore, but when you do them, they always start you like in romance / not porn, but what do they call it?
Softcore.
Erotica.
Yeah, I was going to say, erotica, I could see them starting you there too.
Yeah, I did a couple. Oh, it's so stupid, man. Anyway, you can find that, you guys. You dig deep enough, you will find stuff about me you don't even know.
Awesome.
I'm telling you. Listen, I hope you enjoyed the show last week with Mike Bonifer. Mike Bonifer is he's like an entrepreneur. He's a storyteller. He created this company called Big Story. And anyway, the point is, he's not like a regular comedian. Like, I mostly have comedians like you.
Right.
Mike Bonifer, not a comedian, but a super funny guy and very, very talented. And he tells a story about how Mike Tyson helped deliver his baby.
Wow.
And I say, Mike, are you sure that's the title of the story? Because I don't want to know the story ahead of time, but I do want to know, what are we talking about? And
yeah.
He goes, Christine, Mike Tyson helped deliver my baby.
Wow.
So anyway, go back and listen to that, guys.
Yeah, no kidding.
But not today, because I'm here now with comedian Pete George, and he brings forth a topic, performing stand-up on Continental Airlines.
Yeah.
Which is so funny. I was a flight attendant for like 7 years.
Yeah.
But when I was a flight attendant in the late 80s and 90s, it was much more serious vibe. You know what I mean? We wore the Navy. I mean, a lot of people still wear the Navy wool suits. But I mean, it was like very, they'd gone to this mode of not being like sexy stewardesses. They went the other direction. And now we were called safety professionals.
Ah.
And it was a double-breasted blazer. And it was, pleated pants. And it was Navy pumps and serving garments. And, you know, so... But I remember when Southwest came along, and I thought that was so like, wow, they're so like, you know, out there that they're wearing, you know, polo shirts and khakis.
Yeah.
But why would we have ever treated it like it was some, it is just transportation. Do you know what I mean?
Well, and it is.
Why was it was so like revealed, reviled?
And they were very funny and casual on the PA system, and I remember all that, just like, wow, they're really saying this stuff?
Yeah, on Southwest.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Completely. It was much more staunch. So
right.
When you were doing this comedy for Continental, can I just ask you the year?
It was probably the early 90s.
Okay.
I know that Continental...
Same time then, really.
Yeah, Continental had just filed for bankruptcy, so I think they were kind of in a space of being desperate.
They were huge in Houston, right? That was their big hub?
Yeah, I think the hub was in Cleveland, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You're from Cleveland.
Originally,
I know
yeah.
that. Because yeah. we've already fought about, you know, football,
the Browns, yeah.
Sure.
And I know where you're from. Cranberry and all that. And
Cranberry.
Yeah.
That's so funny. Throwing out Pittsburgh references. That makes me laugh.
Yeah.
I'm going back to Pittsburgh next week, actually.
How are you?
Yeah, for the first time in a while. And but I look forward to it. It'll
yeah,
be,
see
it'll be
your
fun.
Family, friends?
Family, friends, doing a show, you know.
See how Yins are, see how Yins are doing?
Yins are doing. Yeah. Get some. I go downtown and that. And, you know.
Yeah.
Pop an iron. We'll see. Anyway, listen, so Pete, you are a comedian, and you know, like I said, I've had a lot of comedians on the show, but you do so much traveling.
Yeah, I have.
And you perform all over.
Yeah.
You're just traveling constantly.
Not like I used to. I mean, yeah. sometimes I go out like once a month, once every 5-6 weeks, and yeah. then I'll pepper it with shows here and there.
Yeah.
So I kind of mix it up right now because I'm up to creating other things, staying in town.
Since you've done so many gigs, like, I mean, you've done gigs like, you know, like the Planet Hollywoods and the Hard Rocks and the Pechanga Resorts, House of Blues, like all these chains, it sounds like, as it were.
Yeah.
What's your favorite thing to do?
You know, I like little rooms where yeah. it's very intimate, but I also love big rooms with, you know, a couple thousand people. It's just, you have to completely change up your energy, but I like working at all. It's just, it makes it more interesting.
Yeah.
What I don't like is performing at the Mississippi Valley Fair in Iowa.
Yeah.
Because we performed at midnight in the beer tent after the boxing rings.
That is unbelievable.
And it was so bad, the sheriff who hired us had to walk up on the boxing ring, had his hand on his gun, and had to walk us off the stage.
Because people were taunting you so much?
Oh, it was horrible.
Why were they
drunk. There was a boxing matches, you know? They wanted to fight us. And
that is so funny.
Yeah, it was horrible.
Stand-up comedy in the wrong place where people don't want yeah. to hear it
yeah.
is just a nightmare.
Yeah.
You really have to abandon any jokes at all and just go to what is happening.
Kinda, yeah. I mean,
how can you push forward?
That's a good point. I mean, years ago I did a corporate show in it was 2 hours east west of Toledo.
Yeah.
And I drove 3 hours from Cleveland. And I get there, I'm driving through corn and everything. I get there, I'm at this community center, this little town, and it felt really odd. And I see a sign on the door that said, absolutely no alcohol, no profanity, no tobacco. And I went, boy, I don't know if I should be here, because I could be pretty edgy.
Yeah.
And I asked the janitor, what's going on here? And he said, oh, they're all Mennonites.
Oh,
and I'm
wow.
like, oh, I'm dead in the water.
What in the world?
So they had a big curtain with a stage, and it was packed with people from the community, right?
Because it's an event.
Right. So I said to the woman in charge, I have to go backstage because I use my electric guitar in half the show. I
right.
said, I have to hook it up. I got to change my clothes. And then you can introduce me from the stage. So I go right behind the curtain. She walks up to the podium and introduces me. I'm not even dressed or ready. So I'm hurrying up behind the curtain trying to get ready. And then I stick my head out through the curtain. I go, can you come here? And everybody can see this. I
yeah.
said, can you introduce me from the stage?
Yeah,
let's
yeah.
just make it. She goes, fine. And she's getting mad. So she walks up to the stage. She introduces me. I walk out. She goes through the curtain. And I'm like, a round of applause for, you know, whatever her
yeah.
name. She thought I called her back out again. So she puts her head out through the curtain. What? What now? In front of everybody. And I'm like, and so I said, gosh, you guys, I thought you didn't allow alcohol in here. Okay. Now I found out after.
So funny.
She's their boss. It's for the community hospital. So I'm kind of getting some laughs, but boy, this doesn't feel right. And then I was getting nervous, so I said an old hack joke just to, you know, there was an old couple there, and they were married, and I made the joke, which is I don't ever use this hack stuff anymore or old lines, but I said, are you married? And they said, yeah. And I said, oh, I'll give her a kiss on the cheek. And he did, and I said, now go for some tit.
You did not do that.
I swear to God.
What
and I look over,
that?
And the woman is furious. She gets up, who hired me, walks up to the stage with her arms crossed and just stares at me, daggers. Well. And I go, did you want to come up here? She goes, no. Get out of our building.
Well, what, get out. Why would you do that
I don't
with
know.
The Mennonite crowd?
I don't know. So I looked at the audience. I'm like, you guys are kind of laughing. You want me to leave? And nobody said a word.
Oh,
and I yelled, answer me.
Oh, my God.
And about five people go, yes. So I went backstage and I unplugged everything. I yanked it out. I grabbed my clothes and I took off and called my manager. And I was just, it stayed with me for like 3 years.
it's just really, really, really funny. I just,
no.
I just cannot even get over that. Right. You've had so many experiences because you've played in so many different settings.
You're right.
You know, it's not like, oh, I just do comedy in the belly room or something. Oh, I just do comedy at open mic night or whatever. You've been in these situations where you are just thrown in and... I don't know. I mean, I know a lot of comedians, they go through this, but I'm really excited to hear your story about performing on Continental Airlines.
Yeah.
Hey, you know the Mother's Day is coming up. Well, let me just tell you, the best gift you can give your mom is a FabFitFun subscription. I'm telling you, you guys, these FabFitFun boxes are just amazing. All sorts of brand new products, full sizes. You can even customize your box, and it comes 4 times a year. So that's like giving your mom a gift 4 times a year. So I just got my editor's box the other day, and they always have things in there I can use. Not only things I can use, then things I just want. Like they sent me a little pearl necklace the other day. I mean, who just gives me those presents, Pete George?
I got it.
They send you things that I love that like are practical, like leave-in hair conditioner or like eye cream that I love so much. But then they also send like really nice things. Like I got this meditation aromatherapy diffuser.
Wow.
I know. You plug it in and then a light comes on and it starts changing. All of a sudden you're like back at, you know, Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon. You know, Laserium.
That I could use.
If you sign up for FabFitFun today, use my code STORYWORTHY and you'll get $10 off your first box. So go to FabFitFun.com to sign up and start getting the box for a life well lived. Use my promo code STORYWORTHY. You'll get $10 off your first box. That's only $39.99 for all these products. You guys are going to love it. Go to FabFitFun.com, use my code STORYWORTHY, and you'll get $10 off your first FabFitFun box. All right, listen, you guys, we're going to get to Pete George's story here in just a second. But before we do, I wanted to remind you to follow me on Twitter and Instagram at StoryWorthy. I always appreciate that. And also, you know, on the Instagram, I have a whole account for Story Smash, my game show.
Mm-hmm.
So it's at Story Smash. And I have to tell you, I have about 400 pictures up there, and they're all of the game show. So it's really fun. So it's kind of like a curated Instagram account. Do you know what I mean? It's
right.
Not just like random photos.
Yeah.
The photos all make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because in my own Instagram feed, StoryWorthy, I have a hard time not throwing something in against Trump now and then.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
I got it.
Or like a
yeah.
a funny, you know,
right.
Something funny. But on Story Smash, well, I keep it funny, but I'm just saying there's a lot of great photos from the show. So check me out there if you would. Please. And of course, I would be remiss not to mention my other podcast, Screwed Up Stories. Screwed Up Stories, I do with comedian Rachel O'Brien. We're having a great time. We are on the Westwood One network. And so, you know, check out Screwed Up Stories.
Yeah.
ScrewedUpStories.com. You go there, and then all the places you can subscribe are there.
Yeah.
So you don't have to, like, go to the big haystack that is Apple Podcasts.
Mm.
You go to ScrewedUpStories.com. Right there.
Perfect.
You get choices.
All there.
That's what I'm saying.
Got it.
All right, you guys. He's here right now. Pete George. He is a comedian, like we said, who tours extensively. And like you were saying, you are a musician, but you're like a very accomplished musician.
Yeah. My father was the first accordion soloist in the military at West Point.
That's super interesting.
That's what he did full time. And his brother was like a huge record rep since the 60s through the 90s.
Wow.
Like he was in charge of the whole Midwest for MCA. So when I was in college, I'd work for him 2 days a week in Cleveland and I'd get all the records I want, go to the concerts.
That's terrific.
Call stations. And then my band at the time, we were the ones to get the petition drive started to get the Rock Hall in Cleveland.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, so I was there for opening day. And
were you in a heavy metal band because it was the 80s in Cleveland?
No, I was in an alternative band before alternative was mainstream.
Get out of here.
And we were called Separate Checks.
Come on.
Although I would tell people in my show we wanted to be like a Flock of Seagulls.
Yeah.
We were called a Peck of Peckers.
Did you have a lot of synthesizers then? Is that what you're saying?
We had one, but it was kind of like oh gosh,
the Roland D50,
kind of like the Pretenders, but a little more like 80s rather than late 70s.
Okay,
yeah, and we would play all over Cleveland, and it was a blast. I had a great time. I had that long.
And how did you leave that life?
Like,
how did you decide not to do that anymore?
So So in the 80s, I really wanted to try stand up, and so I went to the Cleveland Comedy Club, which was like the only club around. And every Sunday, they would have a competition with 10 people. You had to do 10 minutes. And half the comics were already professional. And I was absolutely terrified.
Yeah.
150 people in the audience.
Can't imagine.
I couldn't even, literally, my legs buckled in the back of the room.
How did you get that time?
You mean the 10 minutes?
Yeah.
I just worked on an act.
No, but I mean, how did they book you for that?
Oh, you just go there and sign up for the competition.
I see. Okay.
And so I ended up winning.
Wow.
First time, $50. And then you could go up every Sunday, but my incentive was the $50. So I waited a month to go on stage again. Mm-hmm. And I ended up winning again. And then I ended up winning a third month. So my first three times were all competitions and I won all three. And then I just started getting like professional work. And of course, you know, then you start to suck. You have crappy shows and you build from there. But I mean, right out of the box, I think if I hadn't had that experience, I may not have pursued it.
Yeah. You're lucky. You were so young.
Yeah.
You know, like you knew your path.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah. And because I've always been involved with music, I just felt, you know, I have to include my guitar in half the show. It's made me distinct for sure.
Okay, so, you know, you're a comedian, so you get it. I asked you to send me a small bio, and you sent me, like, kind of your press kit or whatever.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to go over some of your special skills on your resume.
Oh, boy.
Here we have ice skate, rollerblade.
Uh-huh.
Horseback. Horseback, you say.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And you also do archery?
I do.
Bowling
and archery at the same time. How about
mm-hmm,
that?
Mm-hmm. And then we move on to driver's license.
I know. This is the stupid stuff like agents want you to have, right?
And then you have stick shift.
Yeah, I could drive stick shift.
Uh-huh.
Thank you.
You also have rifle and small arms.
Yes, true.
Uh-huh. And then you have camper.
Right. This is what the agent wanted. I'm telling
you. Scout and construction. Because, you know, when you're hiring an actor, you often want to know, you know, if they can throw up a 2x4, a yurt or something, right? I mean, you never know.
I have a little construction, little one, if you want to hear it, so.
And then you also have life coach.
Yeah, true.
Okay.
True.
How does that work? You go and you encourage people.
I did, I did the program, you probably know, the Landmark Forum in 15 years ago, and I did all that work, and then I started coaching their self-expression and leadership program, which is a four-month program, and I've coached and head coached like five or six of those. And people are always calling me and asking me to coach them through whatever they're dealing with. And then I've actually used coaching on the stage to deal with hecklers instead of attacking them. And it's actually much funnier because they don't know what to do with it because they think you're going to go after them.
So they say something and then you would say what?
Well, they just say something. You know, I had a guy stand up and start yelling something, and you just go into the conversation of like, well, what's occurring for you in the moment? What's showing up that's making you uncomfortable?
Yeah.
You know, well, you said, well, what did I say? Yeah. Like, see, it's not what I said. It's really what you made it mean. And you're coming from your past because most emotions are a byproduct of past-based experiences.
Too
and they're like, what?
Too funny.
Yeah. And you just run from there with it. And it's funny.
Stay really. Yeah. Because you're so, you're speaking very clearly and well-spoken. And
they're
just
drunk.
Look like idiots. And they're drunk. Yeah.
Right.
You're very funny. You guys can find Pete over there at therockstarofcomedy.com. Don't you love that? Therockstarofcomedy.com. It's all there in the title.
And yet I'm not.
What do you mean you're not?
I'm kind of silly.
People you are.
I'm silly and dorky on stage, but that's the contrast of the persona.
But you're a really good guitar player.
This is true.
I mean, I've watched you on YouTube, a lot of your stuff. It's really great.
Yeah, thanks.
You also can find him over on Twitter at PeteGeorgeTV and also on Instagram. Okay, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Pete George.
Yay!
Yay!
So it was the early 90s. I had been doing stand-up professionally for about 18 months. And there was a club, Hilarities, in Cleveland that wanted to be part of this whole thing where Continental Airlines wanted to start using comics to perform on their planes as a promotion. So I was called down to audition, and they picked three winners from Cleveland and two from Detroit. And in the audience, the judges were... they were travel agents, 50 travel agents, of all people to be a judge, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, because, you know, their sense of humor.
So funny.
So I ended up winning in Cleveland, whatever, winning or getting it, because you get paid $300. So I was like, okay, that's great. So The next thing I know, I see media everywhere. Johnny Carson's talking about this, what we're going to do. Arsenio Hall, NBC, CBS, CNN, Wall Street Journal took out a full-page ad on this whole promotional thing. So, of course, you know, we're getting a little nervous about this. So we pick a day of the week, Monday through Friday. I figure I'm going to take Friday because, hey, it's Friday. It's casual, like a club. You know, it's going to be relaxed. So Monday, Al April takes that day. And he's an older comic from Detroit. He gets on the plane. Every seat is purchased by a media outlet. There's a camera in every seat. ABC, CBS, Fox, everybody. Now, these are 40-seat commuter planes, turboprops. You know how loud those planes are. Not the best place to have people focus. So Al goes up, and he was absolutely terrified because nobody's laughing, right? Because they have the camera. They're focusing on that.
Yeah.
So I hear this story, and I'm like, great. And now I'm getting more nervous. So end of the week, I get to the airport in Cleveland, and there's a big marquee with my headshot at the gate. Appearing this flight, Pete George. So now I'm really going, oh my God, I'm really nervous, right? So you run out. You don't even go through the walk. You go on the tarmac, and you walk out to the plane, and everybody boards, and it's packed. And I get on, and I buckle in the front, and I'm just going, oh my God, right? And I'm with the rep from Continental. So she's sitting next to me. We get up to altitude because you do four flights in 3.5 hours, Cleveland to Detroit, run to the next plane, back to Cleveland, back to Detroit, back to Cleveland. So we get up to altitude and she goes, okay, go. That's what she says. Now, we're not allowed to use the plane's PA system. She has a microphone with a little tiny handheld speaker that she holds up next to my head while I'm standing there. So basically, the first five rows can hear me. So I get up, and I'm nervous. And I get into my 10-minute set, and they're starting to laugh. The first few people in the front were like looking down, reading. But other people start to laugh, and the laughter is building and getting louder and louder. I'm like, oh, this is actually pretty good. This is awesome. So I do my set. We land. I'm feeling pretty good now. So we land in Detroit. We run right to the next plane. We go back to Cleveland. Now we have about half full. So the laughter was sparse. I find out there's a writer for Just for Laughs magazine on the plane doing a story. And I'm like, oh, okay. That's cool.
The festival.
The festival, yeah. And I'm like, okay, this is pretty good. And I did okay for half a flight, right? So my third flight back to Cleveland, we get on the plane and there's four people, including this writer. He's going back to Detroit. And I'm like, oh, crap. So I look at the rep from Continental. I go, do I have to do the show? She goes, yeah, you still got to do it. I'm like, really? For four people? She goes, yeah, you got to do it. So we get in the plane. We buckle up. We take off. We get up to altitude. And she goes, okay, go. So we both get up. And literally, the minute I get up, I grab the microphone, I go to say my first joke, and the plane just drops. And I hit my head on the ceiling. It was the worst turbulence I have ever experienced. I was trying to get in my seat. I'm hitting her. I'm falling over, and the pilot gets on. Everybody in your seats, buckle up immediately. And we are all over the place. I'm looking at the people behind me, and they're, like, panicking. And I get in my seat. I finally get buckled up. My heart's pounding, thinking we're going to die. And I swear to God, the woman from Continental leans over and she yells, if you want to get paid, you have to keep going.
That is no way.
Just like that. And
no,
I'm like,
way.
I can't get up. She goes, no, you have to do it from your seat. So I'm at the window, buckled in. She's next to me. She's holding the handheld speaker up. I am turned, leaned over the seat with the microphone practically knocking my teeth out from the turbulence.
Gosh.
You can hear audible gasps from the people. You know that sound?
Oh, sure.
Oh. It's like their eyes are like practically bleeding. I was so scared. And I, you know, they're freaking out and I'm doing my little skit. You know, she's just there and I'm trying to do my jokes and nobody's laughing. And the guy from Just for Laughs, I'm watching him. He's got his pad and he's got his pen. And he can't even keep his hand on the pad. He's going off the pad.
Yeah.
And I'm doing my thing and I did my 10 minutes. And I did what I was supposed to do. I wanted to get paid the $300. I was desperate, right? And we land, and the rep from Continental, she... So, by the way, this was the only flight where the comics had turbulence. All the other comics had the best flights all week. So we get off the plane, and she looks at me and she goes, you know, I think the comedians from Detroit did better.
She's hilarious.
Yeah, and I'm like, wow. And that's when they interviewed me a little bit more and everything and asked what was next. And I said Amtrak, probably, after this little bit safe. But you couldn't do airline jokes. You couldn't do drinking jokes. You had to keep it so squeaky clean.
Right.
And just very specific. You had to do the same set so they knew what you were saying. But
oh, yeah. They would be so on top of it. I mean, you know, as a flight attendant, I know that our language was very, you know, limited what we could say or what we could do.
Right.
You know, it was just very different back then. It was staunch. But I remember when this started.
Yeah.
Because that was the era I was flying as well. And you're right. Johnny Carson talked about it like it was really in the vernacular in terms of comedy. You know, it was really like if it would happen today, it would be all over Twitter.
Completely, right? And you'd get a lot more exposure from it. But
yeah. But it's just ridiculous to try to captivate an audience. What if they don't want to, you know, it's just terrible.
Yeah, too many distractions. I mean, what do you say to, you know, you can't, you know, when you're performing in a room where there's like a barf bag at every seat.
So how many times more did you do it?
I just did the four. It was promotion for the week, and that was it.
And then did the whole thing end? I forget how it ended.
Yeah, that was it.
Didn't last, you're saying.
Well, Continental went into bankruptcy.
But right away? Was that
I don't know if it was right away, but I think they ended it. I think they may have done it one other time before us in Newark.
Yeah.
And then it was our turn, and that was it. But yeah.
So you were just doing those little turnarounds from to Detroit. It's so funny. You would have to wait till you get up to altitude and then get out of your seat. Get out
10
of your
minutes.
Seat. And then did you, like, okay, when you were in the emergency situation, did you address what was going on?
No.
I mean, obviously.
No.
Well, how could you just talk about, what were you talking about?
I had to do my set. I couldn't really ad lib. You couldn't talk to them. You just had to do your set. I went into my little jokes. I don't even remember my set, but they were jokes.
That stuff is so corporate. You know, they make it, it's like being a Universal Studios tour guide, you know, on that tram.
Right.
They don't have one word of wiggle room. In terms of the script.
And so what happens is you don't get related to the audience. And that's the first thing you have to do is get related.
Yeah.
Right? And the thing about Cleveland to Detroit, literally when you take off from Cleveland Airport, you just get up and you literally can see Detroit.
Yeah.
Like it's that short
so
of a flight.
Funny.
You're just going over the lake.
Yeah, sure.
Right.
We did short hops like that a lot from tiny towns in New York. There are so many tiny towns in New York, and we flew to every one of them.
Yeah.
Like Elmira and Ithaca and, you know, Syracuse and Buffalo. There's all these little tiny...
Chautauqua?
I don't think we went there.
Yeah.
But I didn't work on the tiny planes. I always worked on, I mean, you know, small stuff like DC-9s, but they weren't they weren't prop planes or they weren't, you know, little they weren't commuter jets.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very different now being a flight attendant, I think, in terms of, you know, first of all, everybody has a cell phone, so that would change the environment right away. You know, because we didn't have phones, so we would read books, of course. You know, I used to read a novel a week, but it was a lot more, I don't know, it was a lot of boredom.
I can imagine.
We flew around frequently with under 20 people on the plane.
Yeah.
Back then, you know, they didn't fill up every flight. It was very different.
Mm-hmm.
Or we would just ferry a plane from one place to another, you know, just to get it in place, you know.
Right.
So we would just ferry a plane from Pittsburgh to Houston just because the flight needed to take off from Houston to go to Vegas or whatever.
Right.
And so we would just take empty planes down and... that was always a lot of fun, ferrying around, because they always let me sit in the cockpit on takeoff and landing.
Right, which is fun, yeah.
Super fun. We would get on these tray tables, like not tray tables, but they were like first class trays,
mm-hmm.
and we would get on by the cockpit when we took off.
Yeah.
And then we would go and like let ourselves slide down the aisle in a vertical. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's fun.
It was like sledding on the plane. Yeah.
Right, right.
And then we'd watch any movies we wanted. Because back then it was literally a VCR machine, as it were. And we would have all these different movies, but we had to play certain ones on certain flights. But we would play any movie we wanted. You know, it was... there was some fun stuff going on. But all in all... a kind of a repetitive.
Right. I can imagine it would be boring. People think it's exciting, but.
Yeah, I don't know.
I flew one time with four other comics from.
Well, I do know. I'd say I didn't know. I do know.
I know.
It's boring.
Yeah. I flew from LAX to Okinawa with four other comics to do shows.
Mm-hmm.
And all the other comics took sleeping pills, and I didn't.
It's smart to do that.
But I was the only one that slept. They didn't sleep. Well, they were miserable.
Why?
I don't know. I mean,
well, they didn't have the right drugs.
Maybe. We landed in Osaka, and it was in the morning, and I had a beer, and I felt great. And they were just, you know.
Yeah. Well, they didn't take the right thing.
Probably.
I've also heard of making people do comedy in front of jury duty. You know, so there's like 400 people, like in L.A., our jury duty pools are so huge, so big, 400, 500 people in jury duty, and then they get comics to come in and entertain them.
Yeah, I haven't heard of that, although I did.
That was years ago. It was years ago. Now they don't need to because everybody brings their laptop.
Yeah.
Everybody's working on their phone or whatever, so people don't have to be as distracted.
Right.
But back then, you know, they were trying to, you know, give people some reprieve from the dullness of sitting in an auditorium or whatever, you know, a big room.
2 years ago, I did jury duty with Kevin Hart.
How funny is
that? Sitting next to me.
That is too much.
In the courtroom. And
Too much.
I'll never forget, like, I couldn't stay because I had court-ordered child visitation the next week in Cleveland that I had fought for years.
Wow.
And I also had shows. And I asked twice if I could get out of it. They wouldn't let me. And then the Kevin went and talked to the judge and they let him out just like that because he had shows. So when they asked me, they said, you know, the judge said, can you trust any court-appointed officer? And I said, I spent 13 years in domestic court. No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
And they still kept me. And I was literally, I was the last group to go to the jury box. And I'm going, I'm freaking out. I got to go see my kids, right? I want to go see.
Wow.
And they call me to the jury box. And I lean back to sit down. My butt is not even in the seat. And the prosecutor turns around and says, I released you.
Wow.
And I was like, oh.
That's good. Yeah, it's very hard to get released for jury duty. I remember one time being in the jury pool and different people raising their hands trying to get out. And a lot of them said they were doctors.
Yeah.
And the judge wouldn't let any of them go. He's like, no. The only person that got released was this guy, this Indian guy. And he said, I'm getting married tomorrow night.
Oh.
And he was getting married like on a Tuesday at 9 p.m. or whatever. And so the judge released him.
I got to use that.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Well, they might believe you. I don't
right?
know. Hey, listen, thank you so much for coming on today and hanging out and telling me that story.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm glad they don't have that anymore.
Yeah.
I think it's really crazy.
I agree.
Anytime you're trying to make somebody, like I said, you know, do something. That's like trying to do comedy in a DMV.
Right.
Nobody's here for that.
That's an idea.
We used to do it. My buddy Jim Conflin and I did a comedy. We started a comedy night at Starbucks, but it wasn't a stage. It was just us with a microphone.
Right.
We did it for like 2 months on Sunday nights.
Yeah.
Maybe 3 months, maybe longer. But it didn't go well because the sound of the coffee machines. But more than that, again, it wasn't set up for that.
Yeah.
So people just go to work or do something and then you're in their way.
Yeah. We did almost 2 hours for 4 people once in Key West.
Oh, my gosh.
And I had never done this before. The MC went up and did 2 minutes, and then I would do a tag team. I would high-five him, and I would do, like, 4 minutes. And I was opening at the time, and then the headliner would come up and do 4 or 5 minutes, and then the MC, and we just would rotate. And when the two women got up for the restroom, that was half the audience. So we would just sit there and have a beer with the guys.
That's so funny.
They'd come back. We went on stage, and it was one of the most fun times I've ever had on stage.
Yeah. That's really great. Well, anytime it can be special like that, or you know, you have skin in the game, you know.
Yeah,
that's fun being part of a group like that and being in a
And once again, completely related to them.
Hey, do you like doing the cruise ship thing or
no? I used to. I just don't care for it.
Yeah, how many did you do? Like a lot, like dozens or?
I did like I did 2 weeks on one ship, and then I did 5 or 6 weeks on another.
What didn't you like?
I didn't like at the time. I didn't like the fact that you could only use your cell phone once a week, and I wanted to talk to my kids. I wanted to talk to people I was with. In fact, the first week when I got into port, I had 4 more weeks. The girl I was dating called me and broke up with me, and I couldn't call my friends or talk to anybody. I was and then do shows, and then they were so restrictive on material. I just I didn't enjoy it. I like being very self-expressed on stage.
Definitely.
And I like
it's the corporate thing. It's the whole corporate thing.
And I've done a lot of those, you know.
But there must be some fun cruise ships. There's got to be.
There probably are, but I'm up to creating some bigger things right now, I think, so I'm not concerned about
that. The thing is, you go off on a cruise ship like that, like, you're so isolated.
Yeah.
You know, you get, so you're on stage for a half hour at night, but then what about the other 23 and a half hours?
And you're by yourself.
Yeah, you're stuck.
You're not with a band.
No.
No.
You're stuck. You're by yourself.
Yeah.
It's tricky.
I'd rather get hit on by Persians.
Interesting.
I did.
What does that mean?
20 Persian swingers 6 weeks ago at the Ventura Harbor Comedy Club were, after the show in the lounge, were asking me on dates and everything. It was very surreal.
What were they doing? Having a party of some sort?
Yeah, a guy walked up to me with his wife and he said, I was wondering if you'd take my wife on this, go to the swingers party as her date on Saturday and do whatever you want.
Wow.
He just like that, he said that. And I actually said to him, that's the day I have to get my penicillin prescription refilled. So
that's so odd. What a crazy...
It was very odd.
Random.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. You guys head over and tweet Pete on Twitter at PeteGeorgeTV. And then, of course, follow me over there as well at StoryWorthy. Thank you. Oh, and at Screw Stories. That's the other show. Yes, will you? Yes, thank you. And I want to thank all the sponsors on the show today. Really, you guys, when you check out my sponsors like FabFitFun, then you are supporting me and my child, and I appreciate it. And on behalf, one more time, of the very talented Pete George, thank you, friend.
Thank you.
My name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.